Welcome to A Girl in Progress, the self-development podcast for millennial women working on themselves for themselves. We believe it's possible to strive to become the best version of yourself, while also accepting yourself exactly as you are. Whether it's giving you a glimpse into the daily routines of inspiring women, or sharing the stories of those who started before they felt ready, this podcast is all about encouraging you to take imperfect action towards your goals and find productivity and success on your own terms. As for me, I'm your host, Emma Norris. I'm a journalist, author, cheese enthusiast, imperfect action coach, and the founder of agirlinprogress.com. Let's get into the episode. Today's guest is president of Australia's National Centre of Excellence for Complex Trauma, the Blue Knot Foundation. She's also a medical practitioner, a mental health advocate, and herself a survivor of childhood abuse. She's doing some really incredible and important work in trauma and reducing the stigma around it. So I'm really excited to welcome her to the podcast. Dr. Kathy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Emma.
So just to start off with, can you please give us a brief intro or summary as to how you ended up working in trauma? Did you sort of start as a GP, then specialise?
No, look, I mean, I was working as a GP when I started to have to deal with my own history of trauma. And I became so unwell that I actually had to give up my medical practice and then spend a number of years working on my own recovery. And what I learned through that process was how little my medical degree had prepared me, not just for a personal journey, but really about an understanding around what abuse and interpersonal trauma means and how it can affect you. And so I felt fairly privileged to be able to get good support, and I'm very passionate to see that other people are able to access support, because we know that recovery is absolutely possible. But people need help and support along the way.
Yeah. Had you come from a sort of medical GP background or more psychology, psychiatry?
No, medical GP. I was a GP for 20 years.
Yeah. And so without going into too much detail, do you mind giving us a bit of a background as to like what that personal healing from trauma looked like for you? Like what sort of things did you turn to in your own journey of healing?
Yeah, look, I mean, I had grown up fiercely independent, so to admit that I actually needed help was incredibly difficult for me. But when I started to become unwell, I became very anxious and started having panic attacks and became very depressed and ultimately quite suicidal at times. And luckily, I did have the insight to reach out to a psychologist that I knew from my practice. And together we've walked an incredibly long journey over many years as I really unraveled and had a breakdown that meant that, you know, literally I almost had 2 years in bed. I could hardly get out of bed. And, you know, I was married with four kids and obviously that was incredibly challenging. But for me, what was really critical in the recovery was that relationship of trust. And it took a long, long time for me to trust anyone. For me to understand that someone could actually keep me in mind, for me to feel safe, and then really to have a space where I could explore all sorts of things that were happening and you know, returning to my consciousness that I really had no idea how to manage. And the whole process was terrifying because I used to experience quite a lot of flashbacks, particularly early on, where, you know, I was getting sort of fragments of trauma returning. And so instead of being, you know, a middle-aged doctor, I was thrown back to being a child of, you know, 4, 6, 10, terrified and experiencing lots of sensations and body movements and really struggling to make sense of it. So yeah. It was really about that relationship and having someone walk alongside me.
Do you mind if I ask if in your case it was something that sort of triggered the, I guess, trauma and flashbacks, or was it more just, I don't know if consecutive is the word, but you know what I mean?
There was a trigger. So my niece, who I was very close to, died suddenly in a car accident. What that did was really thrown me back into a time of another sudden death of my father, which really hadn't been processed or thought about. And it was that was the catalyst me starting to have to deal with what had happened, you know, as a child.
Yeah, makes sense. And so I think when people think of trauma, they often think of, you know, the war veteran who's been to Afghanistan, or, you know, I guess it can be things like, you know, the car crash. But do you think, what are some of the misconceptions around trauma? Because I'm sure it's not always, you know, just one big event, but it could be, you know, repeated, you know, smaller level trauma during a childhood. So yeah, I'd love to hear about some of those common misconceptions.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, our organisation works with people who've experienced complex trauma, and what that means is people who've experienced repeated, usually interpersonal, so trauma between one person and another, often extreme, over time. And, you know, that can include violence, abuse, neglect as a child, but also as an adult. So you gave an example of a veteran returning from Afghanistan. But when people have had repeated deployments, or adults living in a domestic violence situation, it means that they're living in a state of terror over a long period of time, and the world is dangerous. And that's also can leave people dealing with the impacts of complex trauma. So a lot of it is from childhood, but not always.
Can that cover emotional trauma as well? Maybe not so much the work you do in your organisation, but can that be something that leads to trauma?
No, totally. Yeah, so totally. I mean, people also think immediately of sexual abuse, which obviously, you know, can have profound impacts, but we're also talking about emotional, physical abuse, bullying. So it's a very broad gamut, and we don't like to have a hierarchy of trauma in the organisation. No one can judge how something's affected someone else. That depends on a whole lot of factors, you know, as to whether you've got someone there who can help you make sense of it, whether you're believed or not, you know, what's happened to you prior to that trauma or those traumas. So it's a very complex set of circumstances, and we need to just understand that, you know, many people along life's journey have had adverse experiences, and that we're all impacted them by them in various ways. It doesn't mean we don't learn how to cope with them and can't heal from them, but it doesn't mean that we need to understand why people may sometimes have reactions that to us don't make any sense, but understand that in the context of what's happened to them, it makes a lot of sense. And that's their nervous system reacting to yet another trigger of danger.
Yeah, absolutely. And is that a factor that stops a lot of people from seeking help or healing their trauma? You know, this idea, oh, well, you know, my trauma isn't, you know, a lot of people might have it much worse. Like, is that something you see? It's like a barrier that stops people?
Look, that's one barrier. There are lots of barriers. And certainly there's been a lot of stigma around trauma. There's a lot of stigma around mental health, and, you know, trauma can also cause mental health challenges. There's a lot of judgment. There's a lot of discrimination. And people who've experienced different traumas also feel a lot of shame themselves. Not that they should, that's an inappropriate sense of shame. But when you have a society that then judges, doesn't want to hear, because talking about trauma is very uncomfortable. And, you know, early on when I was doing this work, I used to quip that, you know, talking about trauma was the best way to clear a room, because, you know, it does make people exceedingly uncomfortable. But I suppose the point I'd like to make is it's most uncomfortable for the person who's had those experiences. And so, you know, if there's any message that I get over today, it's about having a society which is tolerant and which, you know, tries to understand. It doesn't mean you need to know the details of what's happened to someone, but just understand that, you know, they've been impacted by something and they're coping as best they can.
Yeah, I was wondering if that stigma is particularly hard in Australia, where we do kind of have this like ethos, like stoic persona and this like toughen up, especially with men. Like, is that something that's particularly the case in Australia versus other places?
Look, I don't know if it's particularly the case in Australia. I think it's very difficult, you know, globally for people to come forward. And I think culturally there can be lots of differences as well. I mean, there are some, you know, cultures that really, you know, would think that Australia is quite advanced in, you know, having words to describe this. So, you know, again, I don't think it's sort of better or worse in one country or another. I think this is a process that we as a world should be on together to understand that, you know, people have different barriers and challenges and sensitivities in life, and how can we work together rather than have a them and us mentality, but work together as human beings.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think everyone has some degree of trauma? Like, is it basically impossible to get through life unscathed?
Look, you know, I'm not here to say that, you know, everyone, you know, experiences major trauma and, you know, it affects us all, but to say that, you know, just really to invoke that sense of understanding. So we all experience, you know, stress. Mm-hmm. And, you know, stress is a normal experience. And we have a stress response, a survival response, a fight, flight, freeze response to stress. But I suppose when we're talking about trauma, we're talking about often more severe and more extreme and more ongoing recurrent stress. And what happens then is that the nervous system stays on high alert. So instead of going back to a sort of state of calm, it can be primed. So people can be very readily triggered. For example, someone who's been on deployment, if they hear a car backfire, they may react because that may sound like gunfire, and that's not something conscious. That's something within their nervous system that's primed, ready to react to that. It's something.
So people with trauma, their sort of baseline level of, you know, where most people might go back to a state of calm, they're kind of always on high alert.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, not always, but yeah, often.
Sometimes,
that can present in different ways. So it can present as being sort of agitated and anxious and jumpy, easily startled, or it can actually present as being shut down and withdrawn. And that's often misunderstood as being depression. And, you know, that can actually also mean that your nervous system is on high alert, but you've actually just withdrawn into yourself because you try to protect yourself from further danger. So it's just a different defense mechanism.
Yeah. And what sort of mental health issues are linked to trauma? Are they sort of like comorbid with it, or are they kind of, they have similar symptoms? Like, how does it all work?
Well, you know, I suppose we would look at, you know, what is commonly diagnosed as a lot of mental health disorders, many of them as trauma responses, and we'd understand them in physiological terms, you know, so talked about, you know, fight and flight and those reactions. Not to say that, you know, the diagnosis can't be helpful at times, but it can be quite labelling for people who've experienced particularly complex trauma. And we know that a lot of people with complex trauma often have multiple comorbid diagnoses, which tells us that's probably not very helpful. And so often people, just as I did, will present as, you know, with anxiety or depression, you know, other more sort of complex, you know, other labels, but yet underpinning that is trauma that hasn't been understood or worked through. And, you know, as happened to me when I've, you know, dealt with my trauma, doesn't mean I've forgotten about it, but I've come to, you know, some degree of understanding and acceptance, and my body, you know, is calm a lot of the time, that, you know, I don't have those diagnoses anymore.
Yeah, okay. And people who have, you know, unresolved trauma, I suppose, but may not necessarily even, you know, label it as such, do they tend to, well, I won't say often, but do they sometimes partake in, like, I guess, buffering sort of things like drinking and, like, you know, binge eating to cope with it, but not even realizing that they have trauma they need to deal with?
Yeah, well, that's right. A lot of people don't actually acknowledge their own trauma or don't recognise it as trauma. If you grow up in a family where violence is normal, that's what you know. So, you know, it may take you actually a long time because of the shame we spoke about, but also because that's just familiar, to actually start to understand that that's actually not how, you know, it's ideal to live and grow up. I just lost the question a little bit.
No, that's fine that you answered it. How do people often become aware that they do have trauma they need to deal with? Is it, you know, coming across work like yours, or does there usually need to be some sort of, you know, a trigger that sort of sets it off again?
No, not always. I think you asked about coping strategies as well. I just wanted to say a little bit more. You talked about it, you know, using alcohol, and, you know, we when people experience trauma, they often live with a high degree of distress, and people survive as best they can. So they adopt a whole range of strategies to cope with that. And that can include alcohol, it can include overwork, it can include gambling, it can include eating, you know. And we need to understand that those coping strategies initially can be quite protective, but obviously, you know, can be quite harmful in the longer term. But it's, again, understanding the purpose that they serve rather than just judging someone who may drink to excess, that they're, you know, an alcoholic and therefore we dismiss them. No, they've got every reason as to why they've done that, and they've done that to survive. And we need to acknowledge that survival is an achievement.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tough question, but is there a way that you can, that we can help people who say, you know, if they might be turning to drinking, but you know, it might be as a result of unresolved trauma? Like, how would you suggest, if they're not ready to help themselves, how can you sort of push them in the right direction? Push is probably
the first thing is, you know, yeah, how do we have safe conversations about trauma? And for the trauma survivor is, you know, who do you trust? Who do you feel safe with? Who do you feel you can just put that initial toe in the water with and share your concerns? And then how does the person that you've approached listen, hear, you know, try and find out what it is you need, not try and solve it, but, you know, help to steer you in that. So it's a very gentle process, and we've developed in Blue Knot a number of publications around, you know, talking about trauma, how to have safe conversations.
Amazing. Yeah, we'll link those in the notes. Is that like a free resource people can download?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that sounds really helpful.
Yeah.
And CPTSD is something that I've been hearing about more in the media. Is that the same as complex trauma or a bit different?
Look, not quite, but you know, for the purposes of this, you know, probably, you know, so...
A scientific level, no.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, people hear about PTSD, but the difference is with complex trauma, when people have... had the very core sense of themselves impacted. You know, what it can mean is that you really struggle with regulating your own emotions. You struggle with your sense of self. You know, people often have a very negative sense of self-worth. You struggle with relationships. You struggle with a sense of meaning. And often people also dissociate, and that's quite a difficult concept to explain, but basically what it means is that, you know, you sort of compartmentalize experiences and often cut them off from your consciousness, and so it's a form of freezing or withdrawing. But you know, people who've particularly experienced extreme early trauma will tend to dissociate quite frequently. And that, again, is another sort of coping strategy, defense mechanism that really the brain is ingenious, because when a child would be overwhelmed by this whole experience of trauma, it's pretty clever to actually break it up into little chunks.
Yeah, so our brains are very good at protecting us, really. They evolved to do pretty amazing things.
Yeah.
And what are some ways that trauma can kind of manifest in relationships later in life? Can it make it hard to have a stable relationship?
Look, it can. And, you know, a lot of the early trauma is what we call attachment trauma. And we know that, you know, people, you know, babies depend on their caregivers for everything. It's, you know, to have a caregiver that's able to nurture and protect and mirror their experiences, you know, means that a child can grow up secure and, you know, go out and explore the world. If you haven't had, you know, that secure attachment relationship, or depending on the ages at which that breaks down developmentally, it can absolutely impact the potential for you to have a safe, strong bond, secure bond later in life. And we certainly hear about people who, you know, do... you know, form relationships repeatedly that are not healthy, because what they're doing is reenacting that model and that schema that they have in the head. And so a big part of recovery is changing the script around relationships and building a secure, safe base from which to form and maintain a healthy relationship.
Yeah. And is that the same if, you know, if they have unresolved trauma and then they have children themselves, is that likely to sort of pass on the same sort of issue, not on a genetic level, but just in terms of the attachment?
Yeah. Yeah, look, and I certainly don't want to say that everyone who's experienced trauma will, you know, go on and, but, you know, when that's been your model of attachment yourself, and when you're still affected by the impacts of trauma, yes, it can impact. But what we also know is just as people can recover and go on to lead really healthy, you know, meaningful lives, so when they've worked through their stuff, their children can also do better. So, you know, it's about hope and healing. That's and possibility. Nice.
Yeah. And I know you wrote a memoir on your own experience of trauma. Yep. Is it helpful to write about trauma, or do you have to kind of already have, you know, done the work first before you can write about it?
And I can't possibly respond on behalf of everyone who's experienced
in your situation.
Yeah. Everyone's obviously unique. So for me, that memoir started off as a catharsis. So that was really, because I'm always someone who's enjoyed writing, it was a medium for me to basically get it out and on the page. But it took many, many years for me to try and make sense of that and weave a narrative that was sort of digestible for others, but also for me to actually make those connections myself and to do what we call integrate, so to bring it all together. So for me, yes, it was a helpful process. I mean, I would write that book very differently now. At the time, I thought it was really well processed, but in retrospect, it was still very raw.
Yeah, I'm still sure it's still very helpful to people reading it. And what are the first steps someone should take if, say, they're listening to this podcast and they think, oh, like maybe I have some trauma that I should be dealing with? What are the first steps they should take to get help?
Look, I mean, I suppose it's not about digging into the trauma necessarily. It's how life is in the present and how you feel you're affected. And it's really about the impacts that, you know, people often reach out and start to explore. So, you know, again, as I said, it's about who you trust, who you're willing to take that first step with, whether it's a friend, a family member, or a professional. And obviously Blue Knot, you know, has a trauma helpline where counsellors are there, and they can, you know, often that first call is really critical. We have people in their 80s and 90s ringing for the first time. They've never told a soul. And, you know, that's often impacted their life for decades. And that call is just critical to actually feel safe, to feel as if you're heard. You know, we have people say that they've never just had someone sort of listen there, you know, sit there and listen without interrupting, without trying to fix it, without making suggestions, but to be really heard and really listened to and believed. Not talking about necessarily the details of what happened, but just the essence of it. And that's a very big first step. There's no single way that people recover from trauma. There's lots of different therapies out there, but what we do know now is that, you know, working with both the mind and the body is really critical, because a lot of trauma is stored in the body, and that's certainly, you know, what I experienced with those flashbacks, that, you know, I couldn't give a narrative of what happened to me at the time, but my body was telling me all sorts of things. Mm. And then I ultimately had to make sense of that.
What sort of, I guess, modalities do you use to release, obviously when working with a professional, to release that trauma from the body?
Look, I mean, I think that's a very complex response. And as I say, there's multiple processes, and different people find those different processes work for them. You know, so I'm not going to recommend, you know, a modality over another, because that's just unique. Other than to say that, you know, it's not about a single modality, it's about what works in combination. But of primary importance is a relationship, and a relationship of trust. And, you know, it's really very, very hard to heal from trauma alone. And, you know, certainly that was I had to learn that, because I'd, you know, learned that I could only rely on myself, and that's just not a healthy way to go through life as human beings. So the relationship of trust and safety and care is critical, regardless of the modality.
Yeah, it sounds like trauma is obviously very complex and very unique. You know, everyone experiences in different ways. So naturally, the healing is going to be complex and unique as well. It makes sense.
Yeah. That's right.
And if there was just one take-home message that you would love to to leave us with, what would it be?
Look, that there's hope and help, and that you can heal and recover. I'm not saying it's an easy journey, but it takes as long as it takes. And certainly what, you know, a good piece of advice is that, you know, the slower you go, the faster you get there. So, you know, not to push it until you're ready, you know, so a step at a time, because otherwise the nervous system, which is on high alert, will get overwhelmed.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Well, thank you so much for coming on here and, you know, sharing your wisdom and knowledge on this topic. I think it's going to be really important to everyone listening. So thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Emma. Thanks so much. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the A Girl in Progress podcast. If you like what you heard, make sure you hit subscribe and leave us a review. You can also check us out over on agirlinprogress.com, the online destination for women working on themselves for themselves, or get social with us on Instagram @_girlinprogress. Can't wait to see you there!